Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A few months ago, an email plopped into the Folk on Foot inbox. It said, "Hi there, Folk on Foot team. Just a note to say, I'd love to be one of your guests, walking around the North Yorks moors near where I now live and where I wrote my last record. Do get in touch if interested." And it was signed, Olivia Cheney. Well, we weren't just interested. We were determined to make this happen, because Olivia has one of the most enchanting and beguiling voices in the English folk scene. And we thought the chance to walk around the North York moors with her was too good to pass up. So that's why we're sitting outside the Hornby Stores and Tea Room in the village of Hornby with Swifts dive bombing us from the eaves of the building, and a river running past us, and the lush green hills going up in the distance, waiting to meet Olivia. And we're looking forward to an amazing afternoon. So we've just come up the hill a little bit and we're meeting Olivia. Hello, how lovely to see you.
And you, hello.
Where are we?
We are at what my family call the cattle grid. Just outside the magical village of Hornby, just inside the National Park of the North Yorks Moors.
And they sort of expand all around us here, don't they? There's this great open expanse of ground here, and a path invitingly stretching away across it. Shall we start walking down that?
Absolutely.
It's a really warm afternoon. And Olivia, what does this part of the world mean to you? What brought you here in the first place?
Oh, so much. Well, I guess, strictly speaking, my family ended up bringing me here. I grew up in Oxford, but my mum moved up north when I was a teenager, and I went off to music boarding school in Manchester. So suddenly, having grown up in the south, suddenly we were all kind of becoming very acquainted with the north. Then her and her partner got a dog, and so they'd drive out into the countryside and go for these big walks. And one day they stumbled across this kind of ruined cottage in the middle of nowhere, and my mum found out who owned it and wrote to the land agent and said, could we look after it, because it's obviously a bit abandoned and vandalized. And they said, oh no, that one's, you know, taken, but there's another one that you could look after. And that's Hazelshaw House, where we're heading. And so my family's kind of looked after it for, I don't know, I guess it must be about 20 years.
And so, do you come here a lot?
Yeah, my teens, my 20s, we'd come out. It's basically like camping because there's, you know, it's very, very basic and rustic out there.
What, no electricity?
No electricity. The running water is basically a hose that the farmer set up from a spring. And no bathroom, you know, and we'd come out and just camp, family holidays, lots of barbecues, and get the most incredible sunsets there with the sunlight coming through the holes in the dry stone walls and silhouettes of the amazing sheep. And it's just, I don't know, there's just no place like it for me, really. I've fallen in love with North Yorkshire.
And you went there to write, I think, to write your last album.
Yeah, so all these years of kind of wonderful associations of this place, then at a very, very particularly busy time in my musical career, and having spent a hell of a lot of time on the road in the States, and kind of, I just thought, where can I retreat to really focus on writing and what I'd like to say in my music? And the place that felt the most appropriate to escape the modern world, really, was out here.
Did you come on your own?
Yeah, and it was very intense, really, both in good and sometimes bad ways. You know, you had nothing, no one, or like no escape from yourself in a funny kind of way.
And what time of year was it?
The plan was summer, so it would, you know, not be too harsh for me, and living out there on my own and endlessly having to make fires to just keep warm. We thought, oh, summer, it won't be too bad. But I couldn't find a second-hand piano. I kept trying to find the right kind of piano to ship out there.
Mad. Well, down this track?
Yeah, mad okay. though it sounds.
Yeah, it does.
But I just was a bit purist, and I was like, I have to have a piano, you know, to write, and as well as guitars and the harmonium. Eventually, I found this beautiful old Bechstein for a very reasonable price on eBay or something in London. Hired a van. But anyway, by the time we'd done all that and amazingly got it out there, it was, I don't know, it must have been late September or something. Mm-hmm. So autumn started coming in.
And it got colder, presumably.
It got colder, it got wetter. So
darker.
Yeah, exactly, all of that. So it did, I wouldn't say bleak, but, you know, there were some evenings where I did think, why am I doing this again?
Were you frightened?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, one of the songs I hope I'm going to play for you back at the house is something I've written for the next record. It's called Bogeyman. And in a way, it's partly inspired still by
wondering about faces at the window and things like that.
Exactly. The song is, in a way, the song is about, you know, do we ever get rid of that kind of the childlike fears of the dark and the unknown, and it's just, it's a play on all of those things. And I certainly, staying out of Hazelshaw on my own for whatever it was, a month, 6 weeks, yeah, was definitely confronted by all those fears more than I would like to admit, really.
Yeah, well, it's such an interesting time to be talking about it too,
exactly.
Because of the lockdown and so on. So it's sort of, in a way, some of us have faced that kind of isolation and in a compulsory kind of a way.
Yeah.
And do you have any sort of things that you learn about yourself and about how you cope with isolation?
I think I'd say that the so-called isolation that we've all experienced with lockdown and coronavirus, for me, has been very different because I've had a child in that time, and, you know, I'm about to get married.
And your baby's name is?
Calliope.
Calliope.
So she's a muse of epic poetry and music, the Greek muses, one of the nine muses. And actually, my grandfather wrote a poem about the muses, and my middle name's Cleo, so I'm the muse of history. So it felt like, I don't know, it was partly inspired by his poem, and also my partner speaks Greek.
That all makes sense. Shall we just pause and listen to the sounds of the moor? Because this is such a gorgeous place.
I think that's curlews and lapwings, both freaking out that we're coming near their nests.
And I can see nestling in the heather what looks like a flight case.
Oh, just, yes, but covered up by the blanket.
Why do you find the harmonium such a good instrument to sing along with?
I think it's the breath-like quality. It's very human to kind of pump the air like that. It just, and so I love singing with it because even though my arm is pumping the air, it kind of, I don't know, it just helps me breathe with the music. And it's just something about the drones as well. And I've got four notes as options for the drones, and I love how that dictates how I write and arrange things, because I have to fit to the instrument, which is good for someone like me who's over analytical, and you know, it's just less choice.
Have some rules.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I thought it'd be nice to sing a song by Ewan McColl, a very famous song. I know you've done a Folk on Foot with Peggy.
Yes. Well, do you know what happened when we went with Peggy Seeger? Was that she told us the whole story about the first time ever I saw your face, but she didn't sing it.
No,
Because she didn't really feel that she could.
Right.
But we're really delighted that you might sing it for us here. What is it about the song that you like?
Well, it's just a very iconic song, isn't it? And I grew up with the Roberta Flack version much more than Peggy Seeger's. And then when I'm sure I heard Peggy Seeger's as a kid, but I didn't remember it. And then when I came back to it, I just fell in love with the song again in a whole new way. But when I recorded it, I felt like, in a funny kind of way, I was trying to slightly pay homage to both versions. The first time ever I saw your face, I thought the sun rose in your eyes, and the moon and stars were the gifts you gave to the dark and empty skies, my love. To the dark and empty skies. And the first time ever I kissed your mouth and felt the earth move, that was there at my command. And the first time ever I lay with you and felt your heart, and lost till the end of time.
And when we look back the way we've come, there's a wonderful green hill, and we can see for miles to a forested, wooded hill in the far distance, and then another green hill on the left, and then it all descends into this moorland.
So the two hills you were mentioning is Hornby Hill and then Easterside Hill, and we've walked up both of them a few times. Hornby Hill's actually less approachable than it looks with all
quite
the bracken.
Quite steep, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a fantastic walk from the house. If I'm not sure I ever did do that when I was writing the record, but with friends I've done it where you just suddenly think, I really need a pint, and then you walk about 2 miles over the hill and then you come out in the village at the pub. Yeah.
Let's keep going. So you mentioned your grandfather writing a poem. Do you come from a kind of artistic family?
Yeah, I guess so. Mad and artistic, yeah, I'd say. Definitely on the unconventional side.
Right, tell me about it.
So he's on my mum's side. He's still going strong, 94, lives in Camden, London, but he's actually from the outback in Australia. But he came over to London in the kind of 50s along with quite a few artistic people from Melbourne, like the painters Boyd and Sidney Nolan. He remarried to an Armenian psychoanalyst, so that's my lovely step-granny. So I have an uncle my age who writes sci-fi, and actually he married into the Fela Kuti clan. He's married Fela Kuti's granddaughter. So.
Wow! And what about your mum and dad?
So my mum's basically Australian, but with an English accent, because my grandfather was a mathematician, and he was at Harvard at one point, so she had a time in Boston. She had a bit of her childhood in Fiji. He went and taught there. And then they came to England when she was still quite little. And she married my dad very young. And he is half Dutch, half English. And then I was born in Italy, in Florence, because my dad was doing his PhD out there. And then we came to Oxford when I was pretty little.
So were you surrounded by artistic activity when you were growing up?
Yeah, on the academic kind of intellectual side of artistry, my sister's a designer, and yeah, my dad was a painter, but then he kind of went into more art and cultural history, and my mum's a writer, biographer. Yeah, pretty arty lot.
What about music? Was there any music in the house?
Yeah, so no one plays professionally or anything, but my dad self-consciously plays very beautiful fingerstyle guitar. I mean, his musical taste has been a huge kind of part of what I grew up listening to. Really good pop music, you know, Mozart operas, but yeah, also a heavy dose of Joan Baez, Bob Dylan and Bert Jansch and Sandy Denny and Joni Mitchell and Briggs. But I guess sometimes that's why I feel a bit self-conscious with like the super trad folk world in this country, because you know, I wasn't growing up listening to like field recordings and going to all the clubs and the festivals like someone like Eliza, you know.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, I feel like there was more than just the folk influence, certainly. And I think it took me lots of hothouse institutions and studying classical music and jazz and stuff all my life to suddenly realise after I'd graduated, actually, what is at the core of all the music that I love? I don't know, I just began to feel like folk music was a kind of portal into a rawness and a kind of humanity in any of my favourite art. And so that's when I started to delve a bit deeper back into that. And that's when I taught myself guitar and started playing the harmonium.
Actually, so when you were at the Royal Academy of Music, what was your principal instrument?
Technically, I was studying jazz voice, but I broke all the rules and I was still doing bits of opera. I actually did mostly contemporary classical stuff. I just was collaborating with composers and I didn't want the rules to be there. I didn't really believe
it doesn't
in the
sound
place.
As though the boundaries exist in a way in your mind.
No.
There isn't a boundary between contemporary classical and jazz.
No.
And some kinds of folk music.
No.
And that all of those things can move in different ways in a very,
yeah,
what somebody described to me as genre fluid.
Yeah,
the other day.
Yes, exactly. So that's the house, that's the cottage.
Oh, we see it now.
Yeah. And it's got that line of Scots pine trees, which It's funny, it reminds me of, you know, where I was born in Italy, out in Tuscany, but that was more for I think that was more for grand houses. You have the line of cypress trees, whereas here it's obviously not for a grand house at all. I think they were dairy farmers there.
But you can see also, because the landscape is open all around, as you can see how isolated the spot is.
So isolated.
Apart from the sheep. You can see the field of sheep next door. But
although what's interesting about this landscape is, you know, all us townies come here for the wonderful isolation. But actually back then, when you look at the Ordnance Survey maps, and there's lots of signs of small bits of mining and things, and actually it would have been not densely populated, but much more populated, obviously, than now. So I always wonder how isolated it would have felt or not for the people living there back then. Again, it's the city versus the country thing of, it's easy to have your fantasy of what the countryside is, but for people who live and work out here, there's a functionality to it.
That is a curvy, isn't it? We saw it this time.
Humans are coming. Quick, take shelter.
So, just here in the heather, we've found another musical
looks
instrument
like
abandoned.
Lying
it looks like a corpse, actually, doesn't it? But I think it might be a guitar.
Hopefully, it's a guitar. Okay, well, wish me luck.
Good luck.
I've never sung this one outdoors, actually. This will be...
It's a first.
Yeah.
Just tell us about the song you're going to sing, Olivia.
So this is called Oh Solitude, which seems very fitting for what we've all been through in the last year or two. But it was written... when would it have been written? I'm trying to think. Purcell's dates are 1659 to 1695. He died just a tiny bit older than Mozart. So somewhere in the late 17th century. And, I think it just still speaks to us now, even without having been in lockdown. It's a wonderful poem that he set, actually by a woman. And it's one of his standalone songs. It's not from any of his operas. And it's over this ground bass, a kind of repeating bass line, which I've incorporated into a more folky style guitar. So it's my way of, I don't think you need to try and update Purcell, but to me, a bit like we were talking about earlier, it kind of comes naturally to me to just sing Purcell in the way I feel is contemporary. And I hope he'd approve.
Solitude, my sweetest choice. Oh, solitude. Oh, solitude, my sweetest, sweetest choice. Places devoted to the night, remote from tumult and from noise, how ye may restless thoughts delight. Oh, solitude, oh, solitude, my sweetest, sweetest choice. Oh, heavens, what content is mine to see those trees which have appeared from the nativity of time, and which all ages have revered, to look today as fresh and green, to look today as fresh and green, as when their beauties first were seen. Oh, oh, how agreeable a sight these hanging mountains do appear, which the unhappy would invite to finish all their sorrows here. When their heart fate makes them endure such woes as only death can cure. Christ's sake, I in love am grown with what thy fancy does pursue. But when I think upon my own, I hate it for that reason too. Because it needs must hinder me from seeing and from serving thee. Oh, solitude, oh, solitude, adore.
You see what I mean? Can you hear the bass line? Is the so that would have been played on a, you know, what are they called?
Baroque cello.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, gamba or something, and maybe you'd have a harpsichord or a lute kind of improvising with it. But I just think that he could write that kind of melody over that bass line. It's just, I don't know, it's one of my favourites. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Look, we're nearly there. I can smell the sausages from here. Sorry to your vegetarian listeners.
We're keen on the sausage on this podcast. So do you look forward to bringing your own daughter here and imbuing her with the love of it?
Yeah, we already have. Yeah, I took her out here very soon after she was born. And I've even got footage of her. She can't walk yet, but standing up and reaching the piano keys.
Uh-huh.
The sad thing is that I don't think, we'll see how it goes when we get there, but I don't think I'm going to be able to play you House on the Hill on the piano that it was written on in the house, that the House on the Hill is about,
wetting my appetite now.
No, but I think the poor old Bechstein, it's a beautiful piano, but sadly... I think the damp and the
so it goes out of tune, does it?
Yeah, it's some of the keys are sticking and things, but we'll see. I haven't been out here for a bit, so it might have dried out in the last few weeks.
So we're turning right now through this gate and into the sheep field. Thank you. So the house is just at the foot of this.
Yeah.
It's sort of almost a little valley, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll go this way. There didn't used to be a fence here, actually. We just used to cut straight over, but just go around.
So we're going through the field of
there's a peewit.
Sheep and lambs.
Did you hear the strange electronic-sounding lapwing? There it is.
Oh, yeah, there's... Is that a lapwing?
Yeah. I was lucky, really. I'm saying it was, you know, it was a bit of a curse finding the piano late and it not being the height of summer anymore. But actually, again, it informed, you know, one of my favourite songs and the being able to really see that. I mean, the weather's always changing and life is motion, but somehow when you're right on the cusp of a big season change, it's kind of more dramatic, isn't it?
Yes.
It feels to me like
definitely.
That anyway. And so suddenly really feeling autumn coming was that really is the thing that I think living in the city you miss. And when you're really steeped in nature, as you are when you stay somewhere like this, your awareness is so much more heightened to the change. Every colour, every sunset, you know, the time of the sun coming up. I also, of course, I fantasised that I'd be getting up at 5 a.m, you know, with the sun every morning and going to bed really early, but it didn't actually really happen.
So we're approaching the house now, and I want to describe it somehow. It's a stone-built house, isn't it? And then there's a barn next to it.
Yeah.
With a corrugated iron roof with some holes in it.
Yeah. That swallows live in. You have swallows sweeping in and out of there.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
with the sheep, giving us a picturesque chorus as we arrive at the gate. Let's cross the stones and cross the...
Yeah, so this little stream is where, if you remember, I said we've got the spring water attached to, you know, coming through a hose pipe for our tap.
So that's where the water comes from.
That's where it comes from. Welcome.
Thank you. So we're walking into the kitchen. Flagstone floor, of course.
Yeah.
A beautiful old scrub table.
Yeah.
And a range.
Yeah.
Which is burning, look.
Yeah, look. Who lit that? This reminds me of me lighting that every morning.
And some sausages on top of the range.
Magical.
This is perfect. And a kettle and a coffee
boiling.
Pot and some wonderful looking cheese scones. And then some lanterns hanging up along the beams here, the low beams. And I mean, it's like a painting.
Aww.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I do.
It's like a painting of a farmhouse kitchen.
That's why I came and hold myself up out here.
And there's a sheepskin on the back of the chair, which is very inviting.
Yeah, it's really, that's the favourite seat in the winter.
Just by the range.
Yeah, exactly.
Will you show us around?
Yeah,
what
absolutely.
Else is there to see?
There's a little, you shouldn't really advertise it, but there's a cheating little camping stove in case you're feeling desperate for coffee in the morning and you can't get your fire lit fast enough.
And look at this. What have you got there?
Swallow nest.
A swallow's nest inside the porch.
Yeah.
Here. Oh, wow.
It's magic. So in the summer, if you just, you know, we often sit out there and have a cup of tea and kind of we basically live out in the front bit. If it's
looking
warm,
over the valley.
Exactly. And you can see Easterside and Hornby Hill if you step out. But if we leave the back gate open and the front door open, swallows fly through the house.
Through from one side to the other.
They come through.
So how is the piano? Would you just tinkle it for us and see what it sounds like?
Let's see, it's not in good nick. It sounds like an old church piano, doesn't it? Oh, it's a bit sad. I know, people wouldn't approve that I've let it fall into disrepair. But
pianos are one of those instruments that don't really improve with age, aren't they?
No,
they tend
not.
To go off a bit.
Yeah, no, I haven't helped it. Putting it out here with the damp. In fact, if I show you upstairs where I slept...
Yes.
You'll see that through the stone walls you can actually see outside.
The daylight.
So
and
I
they're
used
pretty
to,
thick walls, aren't they?
They are thick, but the ones up there have, you know, they're pretty damaged. So I used to have to shove newspaper or like rags in the holes because the wind would. I slept with my hat on. The wind would literally whistle through to my head.
Let's go and have a look.
Yeah, it feels more protected down here somehow. But...
Everyone rallied round to help me dream. But when I came to that I did not feel the way I was supposed to. Things it seems that others do. So here I am, free from distraction. Beauty. At my disposal, but I dismiss each kernel as a star that I cannot finish. Give me warmth, give me shelter, give and face the deep persist.
Such a good view. If you stand here, I think that the view out there—that's Hornby Hill that we were looking at before. I always think they look like beached whales. Those hills.
And the window is, you know, one of those small farmhouse windows, but it perfectly frames that view, doesn't it?
Yeah, Yorkshire sashes. The sideways slide.
So it goes across rather than up and down.
Yeah, I love them. They're all like that here.
Let's go upstairs.
Yeah. And this is, I can't remember what this is called, but it's like of the sheep dip colour. Do you, any of you know this?
So the sort of distressed plasterwork here on the stairs.
Yeah, it's not us trying to make it look stylish. That's actually just genuine peeling away.
Is this your bedroom?
No, I slept through.
This is the guest room, is it? The guest suite?
Yeah, this is the very posh guest room, yeah.
With a spare door hanging against the wall.
Just in case you need it, yeah.
So the windowsill consists of crumbling stone, really, doesn't it? I mean, it's...
the stone needs to be...
crumbled away.
Yeah, look.
Oh, and there's a gap between the top of the window frame and the wall.
Yeah.
And the ceiling there, yes.
I do want to say that when I was here, one of these windows had a hole in it. It was very Heathcliff, yeah.
Yeah.
But kind of worth it and very beautiful too.
Well, I'm sort of being reminded of a recording we did with John Bowden, who's got this fascination with the decay of post-industrial buildings nature taking back over.
Yeah.
And he took us to this disused factory in the Loxley Valley near Sheffield,
where
the ivy and all the foliage is growing
taking
through the iron
buildings.
And through the stonework and so on. So there's something rather attractive and beautiful about crumbling stonework and the fading past plaster that you can see here, isn't there? There's something very
It's like the intersection between, you know, man's effect on nature and it's the kind of eternal tussle of
nature,
man
getting
with
its
nature.
Own back. Yes.
Yeah, maybe. Yes,
that's
a good way of thinking
back,
of it.
It's fighting back, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, this house is just about managing to withstand that, but...
And so through here is the room that you slept in?
Yeah, this was where I slept.
It's got a nice brass bed in it.
Yeah.
But bare stone walls.
Bare stone walls, a bit of old 50s wallpaper left, and where are the... It's not... When the light's coming in a certain way, you can see through the walls,
hole through to the outside.
And there's a hole through to downstairs, if you stand here, look.
And it's easy on a warm day like today to get quite a romantic feeling here, but I imagine on a cold, wet, wild night on the moors here, it can be very bleak in this house too.
Absolutely. You know, when you don't have a light switch or a cooker or all those things that we tend to take for granted, you realise it's just a lot of hard work and it takes up a lot of time just keeping warm and just existing and surviving. And that is part of why I wanted to come here, because I kind of wanted to slow down and have that kind of focus and discipline, really.
What do you sing for us here?
Oh, I'd love to. I forgot we're here to do music, just chatting about the house.
Shall we go downstairs again?
Yeah. So I was thinking, actually, that this song is, in a weird way, it's like a, not quite a sequel to Shelter, but it definitely, I think there's definite kind of references for my own experience of the literal fear of the dark, but the fear of the dark in the more broad sense. Thank you.
see something just outside waiting at the edge, like an old wound that fails to heal. The terror we dare not reveal. Why is the bad dream back under my bed? And I'm afraid of the dark in childhood sweat. Oh, please be kind, fair demon, whether you're real or part of my master plan. Are you just equivocal faith, the part of us we do not want to face, that we're running from eternally in vain hopes of being set free? Why is the bogeyman putting fear in my body and my head, like an old wound I can't turn down? The terror we dare not renounce. Are you just the fabric of our doubts? Deep dark desire within us and without. Taste of panic, whistling lust leaves north and south. Oh, he haunts you best as he goes unseen. Inherited myth, or a hidden or a scene. But we all know troubled guest refusing to leave.
That was fantastic. Can I just say thank you so much for sharing your stories and songs with us, and also for bringing us to this magical place.
Thank you so much.
And I have to say, those sausages are looking really good on the stove.
I think they're just ready.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Olivia Cheney taking us to the house on Hornby Moor. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, you can see films of all the songs that Olivia performed if you sign up to become a patron of Folk on Foot. Our Folk on Foot on Film service that you get if you become a patron is just the most amazing resource. It's got more than 100 songs that we've filmed on location on our travels, including now these of Olivia on the North York Moors. It's well worth joining, and every penny you give goes back into making more episodes of Folk on Foot. So if you love what we do, please go to folkonfoot.com and click on the Support Us button and sign up there. We love making Folk on Foot, and with your support, we'd like to think we can go on forever.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. it. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.